beam before his conscious mind understood what he had done. The red spot of the low-power aiming laser still scintillated on the asteroid's surface. Fuchs moved it to shine squarely on the flailing, contorted body of the mercenary.
"Kill or be killed," he told himself.
It took an effort, though, to will his hand back to the high-power laser's firing control. He held it there, poised a bare centimeter above it.
"Two ships approaching at high acceleration," called the pilot. "No, four ships, coming in from two different directions."
Fuchs knew he couldn't murder the man. He could not kill him in cold blood. And he knew that their trap had worked. It all fell in on him like an avalanche. They knew where the transceivers were hidden. Someone had told them.
Someone?
Only Amanda knew where the transceivers were located. She wouldn't betray him, Fuchs told himself.
She wouldn't. Someone must have ferreted out the information somehow, and then sold it to Humphreys.
"Six ships," called the pilot, sounding frightened. "All approaching at high G."
"Trapped. They were waiting for me to show up. Six ships."
Noden's voice came over the intercom.
"Lasers one and three, ready to fire."
"I'll get them all killed if I try to fight back," Fuchs realized. "It's me that Humphreys wants, not my crew."
Suddenly he felt tired. Bone-tired. Soul-weary.
"It's over," he realized. "All this fighting and killing, and what has it gained me? What has it gained anyone? I've walked my crew into a trap like a fool. Like a wolf caught in the hunter's net. It's over, it's finished. And I've lost everything."
With a feeling of resignation that overwhelmed him, Fuchs touched the communications key and spoke.
"This is Lars Fuchs, aboard the Nautilus. Don't fire. We surrender."
Harbin heard the defeat in Fuchs's voice, and he cursed Martin Humphreys for saddling him with this oversized armada and company of troops. "I could have done this by myself," he thought. "Given the information about where he planted his transceivers, I could have trapped him by myself, without all these others, all these witnesses." By himself, Harbin would have sliced Fuchs's ship into bits and killed everyone aboard it. Then he would have carried Fuchs's dead body back to Diane and her boss, so Humphreys could glory in his triumph and Harbin could claim the immense bonus that would be rightfully his. Then he would take Diane for himself and leave Humphreys to gloat over his victory. But there were more than 100 men and women aboard this fleet that Humphreys had insisted upon. It was nonsense to believe that each of them would remain quiet if Harbin killed Fuchs after the man had surrendered. It would be too big a story, too much temptation. Someone would cash out to the news media, or to spies from Humphreys' competitors in Astro Corporation. No. Against his instincts, against his judgment, Harbin knew he had to accept Fuchs's surrender and bring the man and his crew back to Ceres. Then he smiled grimly. Perhaps once he's on Ceres, something might happen to him. After all, the man's made many enemies there. They might even put him on trial and execute him legally.
The implantation procedure was not as draining as Diane feared it would be. She had insisted that all the attending personnel be women, and Cellini's medical staff had complied with her demand. They were smiling, soothing, soft-spoken. After an injection of a tranquilizer, they wheeled Diane into the little room where the procedure would take place. The room felt cold. A plastic container sat on the table where the instruments were laid out, steaming icy white vapor. The frozen embryo was in there, Diane realized, her thoughts getting fuzzy from the injection. "It's like being put on the rack by the Spanish Inquisition," she thought. The instruments of torture lay in a neat row beside her. Bright lights glared down at her. The torturers gathered round her, masked and gowned, their hands gloved in skin-thin plastic. She took a deep breath as they gently placed her feet in the stirrups. "Just try to relax," said a soothing woman's voice. "Good advice," Diane thought. "Just try."
Humphreys was seated up near the head of the table, one chair down from Stavanger. Dearling was at his left, Pancho Lane across the table from him, and Big George Ambrose at his right. Humphreys did not relish being next to the big Aussie. The shaggy redhead was intimidating even when he was doing nothing more than sitting quietly and listening to the others wrangle. Amanda was on George's other side. Humphreys couldn't even glance at her without leaning around the Australian and being obvious about it. "The essence of agreement is compromise," Dieterling was saying for the nth time. "And compromise is impossible without trust." "Dieterling expects the Nobel Peace Prize for his work in the Middle East," Humphreys thought. "It won't matter much what he accomplishes or fails to accomplish here, but he's so damned earnest. You'd think his own life hinges on what we're doing today." Pancho, across the table, eyed Humphreys for a moment, then said to Dieterling, "Astro's willing to compromise. I've been saying all along that there's so much natural wealth out in the belt that there's plenty for everybody. What we need is an agreement about who gets what." Stavanger shook his head. "I don't think you can carve up the belt the way Spain and Portugal divided up the New World back in the 16th century." "Yeah," Big George agreed. "What about the independents? You can't give the old fucking belt to the corporations." "What is required," Dieterling said, "is an agreement to forego the use of violence, an agreement to proceed peacefully and respect the rights of others." Humphreys's phone buzzed in his jacket pocket. Ordinarily, he would have been annoyed at the interruption, but at this point, he welcomed it. "Please excuse me," he said, plucking the phone from his pocket. "This must be extremely important. I gave orders that I wasn't to be disturbed." Stavanger spread his hands. "This is a good time for a short break, I think." Humphreys strode off to a corner of the conference room as the others all got up from their chairs. Tucking the phone's little speaker into his earlobe, Humphreys flicked the device open and saw "Urgent, Priority 1" printed across its tiny screen. "Proceed," he said softly. Doric Harbin's dark-bearded face formed on the screen. "Sir, we have captured the man Fuchs and his entire crew. We are on the way back to Ceres with them in custody." "Kill him," Humphreys wanted to cry. Instead, his eyes scanned the conference room. The others were standing at the refreshments table. Amanda was nowhere in sight. Probably gone to the restroom, he thought. Knowing that his response would not reach Harbin for nearly a half hour, Humphreys said tightly, "Good work. Make certain you don't lose him. If he tries to get away, or if anyone tries to free him, take appropriate action." "Appropriate action," Grigor had assured him, was the euphemistic code phrase that meant, "Kill the son of a bitch if he twitches an eyebrow." Humphreys closed the phone and slipped it back into his jacket. His pulse was thudding in his ears. He tasted salty perspiration on his upper lip. "It's over," he thought, trying to calm himself. "It's finished. I've got him, and now I'm going to get Amanda." He stayed in the far corner of the room as the others slowly came back to their seats. Amanda returned, looking calm, even dignified. She's grown over the years, Humphreys realized. She's become much more sure of herself, much more mature. Stavanger glanced his way, and Humphreys, working hard to suppress a grin and look serious, slowly walked to his own chair. Instead of sitting, though, he gripped the back of the chair and said, "I have an announcement to make." They all looked up at him, even Amanda. "The one sticking point in our discussion today has been the one-man guerrilla war of Lars Fuchs." Dieterling and several others nodded. "That problem has been resolved," Humphreys said, looking squarely at Amanda. For an instant, she looked startled, frightened, but she recovered quickly and looked squarely into his eyes. "Lars Fuchs is in custody. He's aboard one of my ships and heading back to Ceres. I presume he'll stand trial there for piracy and murder." Absolute silence fell across the conference table. Then Amanda slowly got up from her chair. "Excuse me, please," she said. "I must try to contact my husband." She turned and